we're continuing in, I guess we haven't officially titled it, but our Kingdom Series, talking about what it looks like to live as part of Christ's kingdom here on earth when Jesus is reigning at the right hand of his Father. And today, I guess the best way I could think to title this, the message this morning, is Jesus is the King of the Big and the Small. God's just been challenging me recent years, especially this week, just of, are my priorities what his priorities are? Like, often us in our natural earthly bodies and minds, our natural priorities are not Christ's priorities. And he showed that time and time again as he interacted with Pharisees, as he interacted with people, with sinners. Jesus showed his priorities were a little different than what people expected. And some things just kind of stood out to me. Sometimes we, when our priorities aren't aligned with Christ, we focus on what we think are the big things, and what we think are the smaller things, we tend to put on the background. Things that Christ cares about, we might overlook on our way to the big things. And so there's going to be a cringeworthy picture next that I hesitated to share, but it just made me think. This is all I could think about when I was thinking of focusing on the big thing, and so we missed the small. So I'll give you a minute to read that, if you can. So it says, why is dentistry important? Because even though this man is missing an eyebrow, the first thing you notice is his smile. It's and it's so true. Like I did that. I had to look at it again. It's like, yep, I didn't even notice he was missing an eyebrow, because the first thing I noticed was the big thing or whatever. And some of these things just started to hit me. Like, how many times have I told the kids to wait? No, we can't read a story right now because I'm waiting for an important phone call. Or, Charity, need to talk about something, but no, we need to clean up for someone coming over. Or this, or I got to study for the next sermon or this big event. Like, how many times have I overlooked caring for people right in front of me for these big things? I think we all struggle with that. We come up on these things, and like we pass somebody who broke down on the road on their way to work or a big event or something, and because that's the big thing, we might miss an opportunity to share Jesus with someone or to show the love of Christ to someone through stopping and caring. And so some of these smaller things, caring for people's hearts is important to Jesus. He showed that time and time again. He prioritizes the small things. He prioritizes people who have nothing to offer him. And so how do we, as we start to follow Jesus, start to live as members of his kingdom, how do we learn, how do we know when to prioritize those smaller things and let the big things sit a little bit? Again, it's an important question, because Jesus, when he came, reshaped our priorities. He showed godly priorities through how he lived and how he spoke. Jesus told little children to come to him when his disciples and everybody else thought, you know, children shouldn't bother these important preachers or prophets when they're speaking. And Jesus said, let them come to me. Like, for such as the kingdom of heaven is these childlike faith. So what does it look like as we allow Jesus to realign our priorities? How will our lives look different? Because the little things matter to Jesus too, and often more than what we thought we would think would be the big things. And so what does it look like to show Jesus in these little things when it might take from the big things? And so thankfully, Jesus gave a few examples of these in Scripture, and one of them is in our text today in Luke 8, verse 40 and on. And so remember, 2 weeks ago we looked at how Jesus started to show his disciples that he uses the whole part of the journey for his glory, not just the destination, as he led them into a storm. And then Ben shared last week how Jesus went out of his way across the Sea of Galilee to care for one man who was oppressed by legions of demons. And then this crowd of people that Jesus had been speaking to before he crossed the sea, he's now coming back to, and they were still waiting for him, waiting for Jesus to come back. So it was when Jesus returned to this crowd that the multitude welcomed him. They'd been waiting. That had to have been at least a full day. They'd been waiting for him, for they were all waiting for him. And behold, there came a man named Jairus, And he was a ruler of the synagogue. And he fell down at Jesus' feet and begged him to come to his house, for he had an only daughter, about 12 years of age, and she was dying. So these people had been waiting for Jesus. And he had left just to show love to that one man, because he loved that one man who was oppressed by these demons. He loved them enough to let that crowd sit for a while to go and set that one man free. And then he returns, and the next big thing comes up. Like this ruler of the synagogue, like these religious leaders would have been highly respected, highly feared, highly honored in this culture. And so this guy comes to Jesus, desperate. His daughter's dying, and knows that Jesus can heal her. And of course, Jesus sets off to do that. And I could just imagine, like, being one of the disciples there and thinking, man, this is it. Like, we've seen Jesus do all these miracles, and his crowd of followers is starting to grow, but man, this leader of this religious leader in this area, he's going to start following Jesus, because Jesus is going to heal his daughter. This is going to be the big thing. And just get really excited and pumped as they start going to see Jesus heal this ruler's daughter, this influential person's daughter. And so they're thinking, this is the big thing. And it did matter to Jesus. Jesus did want to heal this girl. But there was someone else, much less powerful, much less popular, much less influential, who Jesus cared about too, that met him along the way. It says, but as he went, the multitudes thronged him. Now a woman, having a flow of blood for 12 years, who had spent all her livelihood on physicians and could not be healed by any, came from behind and touched the border of his garment, and immediately her flow of blood stopped. So Jesus is going, and this crowd is just pressing against him. They've been waiting for him to come back, and this crowd is just flocked around him, just focused on Jesus, so much so that it's actually hard for him to get where he's trying to go. And as he's heading there, this woman who'd been afflicted with bleeding for 12 years, spent everything she had. She went to everywhere, every doctor, everything she could imagine, she could hope in, every rumor of a cure she'd heard of, she'd gone after and tried to find, spent everything she had, and found no healing. And then this, there wasn't just these health consequences she would be suffering with. So often the Jews at that time assumed that sin and sickness were linked. So she would be this accounted by society as this big and vile sinner. She would be an outcast. She wouldn't be allowed in most social celebrations that the Jews had many of, because she was unclean, and because she was most likely a vile sinner because of this sickness that couldn't be healed, this disease. And so this woman's not only just suffering with this for 12 years, she's also alone for 12 years. And then she hears about Jesus. She hears that he's been preaching. She hears that he's been healing people. And she's like, he can do that for me. And she trusts it so much, she believes so much, that she's willing to risk the ridicule of the crowds as they start to recognize her and be like, man, that's that vile sinner. She shouldn't even be out here. Like, she's not clean. She's willing to risk that because she trusts that if she just touches his clothes, she'll be healed. She believed that. She believed it so much to act on it. And when she touches his clothes, she's healed. Completely healed. Imagine, it says the second, it says she touched the border of his garment, just like the edge of his cloak or whatever he was wearing. And immediately her flow of blood stopped. Imagine suffering that for 12 years and it stopped just because of faith in Jesus and his power that he could heal it. So I could just imagine just feeling like this is unbelievable, but it happened. And all of this getting so excited, and then Jesus said something, and her heart sinks. Jesus says, who touched me? And I can just imagine her like, oh, Jesus found out he knows, and I'm going to have to tell him that I came out unclean among the people and account to Jesus. It says, when all denied it, who had touched him, Peter and those with him said, Master, the multitudes throng and press you, and you say, who touched me? But Jesus said, somebody touched me, for I perceive power going out from me. Now when the woman saw that she was not hidden, she came trembling and falling down before him, Jesus. She declared to him in the presence of all the people the reason she had touched him and how she was healed immediately. And he said to her, daughter, be of good cheer. Your faith has made you well. Go in peace. And while he was still speaking, someone came from the ruler of the synagogue's house saying to him, your daughter is dead. Do not trouble the teacher. But when Jesus heard it, he answered him saying, do not be afraid, only believe and she will be made well. So all of this, a lot happened all of a sudden in this crowd of people. First, Jesus says, who touched me? And I could just see the disciples saying, really, Jesus, who touched you? Like, there's this massive crowd of people around you, and you're, like, everyone touched you, Jesus. And I just kind of, it made me think of, so when I was about 9 or 10 years old, my dad took me to a Yankees game. And, I was, like, really small, and there was tons of people. Like it was packed like this, all these people here. And then when the game's over, everybody's getting through these small, like, tunnels throughout the place, and the crowds are just pushing around you, and Dad had me make sure I held on to his belt so I didn't get swept away by the crowds. So I just picture, like, this crowd of people, like, people are bumping into each other like that, and Jesus stops in the middle of this. Everybody's still cramming around him, says, who touched me? Like, if I did that there, people would have thought I was crazy. Like, everyone touched you. But Jesus said, no. Someone touched me, and I want to know who. And this woman comes forward, ashamed. She's like, I'm found out. And in front of all this crowd of people, she confesses. She doesn't hide it, doesn't try to excuse it away. Says, yeah, I was unclean, was afflicted for 12 years, but I touched you, and I was healed. And Jesus looks at her, and I can just see him, like, she's probably in tears, and he's like, don't cry, like, you're made well because you trusted me. He said, your faith made you well because you trusted that Jesus could do this. You're healed. And he says, go in peace. Hold on to that. Why does he say go in peace? She trusted Jesus more than her fears of the people around, the crowds that would see her. She was healed. And I could just see this all being great, and the disciples are like, oh, great, bonus miracle. Like, cool. But then, now let's get back on our way to what we were supposed to be doing. And someone comes from Jairus' house, the ruler of the synagogue, says, your daughter's dead. But Jesus says, don't worry, I'm going to deal with that too. We're getting there. Don't be afraid. Just trust. She'll be made well. But I just stopped here and thought, so why would Jesus stop? Why would he stop and ask who touched me? Wasn't the healer, because it says the second she touched him, she was healed. Right? So even if Jesus had kept on going, she was healed. So why would Jesus stop? Because maybe if he hadn't, that girl would still be alive. But he thought it was important enough to stop and see who touched him, address that person. I think it's because Jesus cared for her heart. Like, he said, go in peace. You've been made well. Go in peace. He didn't want her to live with guilt and with shame, thinking that her healing was counterfeit because she stole it, because she just grabbed his garment without asking permission, without asking him. She just kind of stole her healing. And Jesus cared enough for her heart that he stopped. He let that big thing sit a while. He's like, I can deal with that. I'm strong enough to deal with that too. And he stopped and he showed her that he loved her. He showed her that her healing wasn't counterfeit, that Jesus came to give her life and to give it to her more abundantly. He didn't want her to live healed, but then living with shame and with doubt. He wanted her to have life and to have it abundantly, to have that healing and to know that it was from God, that it was a blessing, and to not live with that shame and guilt anymore. And he counted that little thing worth stopping, letting that big thing sit for a while. And there were consequences. That girl wound up dying. But he cared for her enough that he wanted to give her that life and give it to her abundantly. So that's great. Like, we see this example of Jesus doing that. But how do we know in our lives when we can let a big thing sit to care for the little people around us? How do we know when to let that important call wait to care for our kids, to
spend time with them, show them dad loves them, mom loves them? When do we know when we can let the house be a little dirty, let people think maybe we're a little sloppy, that's okay, to care for each other's hearts? When can we put off preparing for a big event or maybe not be as early to work to be a shoulder to cry on for someone who's hurting, who needs a touch from Jesus? How do we know? There's no perfect answer. I'm not going to stand up here and say I have a three-step plan to knowing God's way to know how to prioritize in godly ways, but I think it comes down to two things. It comes down to knowing Jesus and trusting him with the big things and with the small things. So as we get to know Jesus, we spend more and more time with him, we get to know more and more about him, we get to learn what his priorities are, we get to learn what's important to him, we learn the people he spent the most amount of time with, we learn what matters most to Jesus, we learn more of his heart. But then from there, yeah, we start to learn, we start to see that he prioritizes children and cripples and the blind and vile sinners, people who don't have anything to offer him. He prioritizes them because he loves them. But then we have to couple that with trust. Like if we know what he prioritizes, then we can trust that we can let the bigger things sit to care for his priorities, for things that are the big things to Jesus. And it still takes lots of prayer and discernment, knowing in each minute, Lord, is this the little thing? Is this little thing to me the big thing to you today? Or do I need to keep on going as I was? And if it is, if that little thing's the big thing, if it's spend time with your kids and letting that call go to voicemail, then God's going to be able to deal with the big thing too. Because often what we see as the big things are actually the small things to God. And so I shared this story about 3 years ago. So if you remember it, sorry, it's a repeat. But I just couldn't help, like God just made this story come alive to me. So about 3 years ago, the youth group and I, we went down to Honduras. And it was just an awesome time of ministering Jesus. And we were excited to see God do huge things down there. Like I wanted to see people healed. I wanted to see people come to Jesus. I wanted to see some huge projects done. I wanted to just see Jesus moving alive and get the youth to see that. And so the first couple of days we're training. We're just learning the culture a little bit, learning about sharing our testimonies. So we'd have the chance to do that when we went into the villages. And we got out there, and the second day, first full day we were out in the village, we were going to be going from door to door praying for people, seeing if they wanted prayer for anything. I thought this is going to be an awesome opportunity to see people healed, to see people receive the gospel. Like, I was super excited. And as we were getting ready to go, one of us, Caleb, was sick. Not like deathly ill, but enough that he couldn't get out of bed and go knocking door to door. And so we missed our first part of the day, the first couple hours we were going to go praying for people, and God's like, pray for Caleb. Like, I love Caleb, let's pray for Caleb. And so we prayed for Caleb, and then we did get a chance to go later and pray for some people, and there were some cool conversations and got to pray, and came back a couple hours later, and Caleb was healed. Like, Caleb was up and at it, and completely healed. Like, it was a God thing. Yeah, it wasn't like some major disease, but God healed him. And so what I thought was the smaller thing and maybe even getting in the way of the big things, that was the big thing to God. God wanted to show Caleb that he loved him enough to heal him so that he could do what he had come there to do and not lay in the cot the whole time. God loved him. And God still did great things in the big thing. But if I had just been like, you know what, Caleb, you just stay here and we go out and pray for people those first couple of hours, would have missed what God wanted to do. He wanted to show Caleb he loved them. And God's still able to work in the big things, what we call the big things. And he showed that here in the next slide there. There we go. So when he, Jesus, came into the house, he permitted no one to go in except Peter, James, and John, and the father and mother of the girl. They all wept and mourned for her, but he said, "Do not weep. She is not dead, but sleeping. And they ridiculed him, knowing that she was dead. But he put them all outside, took her by the hand, and called her, saying, "Little girl, arise." Then her spirit returned, and she arose immediately, and he commanded that she be given something to eat. And their parents were astonished, but he charged them to tell no one what had happened. So Jesus finally gets to what the disciples thought were the big thing, this big synagogue leader's daughter, and they think it's too late. Like, she's dead. It's too late. But Jesus says, don't worry, she'll be okay. Like, she's not dead, just sleeping. And they ridicule Jesus. Like, even his disciples are like, no, she's dead. Like, you can't say that to someone who just lost their daughter. So then he puts them all out. He said, fine, you all leave. I'm going to deal with this. I'm going to heal it. And so he calls the girl, and she comes, and she's completely healed. So Jesus just healed this woman who'd been afflicted for 12 years, cared for her heart, and then brought a girl back to life. Jesus can do both. And then what just stood out to me at the end, so what the disciples were thinking was the big thing that Jesus still wound up doing, healing the synagogue ruler's daughter, Jesus tells them not to tell anyone what happened. Again, why would he do that? Because he wasn't after huge cult followings. He was after people's hearts. He wanted to care for their hearts. Jesus wasn't healing that daughter so that he would be more famous, so that those people could have something to offer him, could go and make him famous. He just wanted to heal that daughter because he loved that daughter, because he loved her father. See, because Jesus cares for people who don't have anything to offer him because he loved her. So Jesus cares about little things, and he cares about people's hearts. He's able to care for those and for the big things. Are we able to trust him? Because it's hard when rubber meets the road, like, and someone's broke down alongside the road, and I'm running late to work. I'm not saying every time you stop and always be late to work. I don't want all kinds of calls saying everybody was fired this week because no one was showing up to work on time. But sometimes there's a time for that. Like, it's okay to be late once in a year, maybe, to show love to someone alongside the road. Can we trust them with that phone call so that we can show the love of Jesus to our kids? And can we trust them with those big events or whatever it is so that we can show his love in a personal way to those right around us that he's brought in front of us? And just one last thing kind of stood out to me, at least for myself. There's been so many times I've prayed, God, give me opportunities to show your love to someone today. And I wonder how many times I've drove past them on my way to work, or I've told them to be quiet while I talk to someone on the phone. Because I need to spend more time with Jesus, and I need to know what his priorities are that day so that I can prioritize what Jesus prioritized, because I know he is able to do work in the big things and the small things, because he is king over it all. Amen? Amen. Jesus is king. King of the big and the small. He wants to know us. He wants to know those who are broken and hurting. And he can do that through us. And we can trust him with the big things when we take time to care for the small things too.